we are recording again, and we are so glad you have joined us right now to make a difference in your life. And this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and my co-host,
Rob Hubler. And you are listening to KRUU FM 101 on the dial in Fairfield, Iowa, solar-powered radio.
And we broadcast 6 Thursday and Tuesday nights and rebroadcast Thursdays at 12:30. And everything is archived, so if you want to listen to our past shows, it's there. And please email us at mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com for show ideas, comments, thoughts. We love to hear from our listeners. And we've got our special host today, our special guest today, once again, the phenomenal, the powerful, the meaningful, Professor Ken Daly.
Hey. With an introduction like that, we'll go on anyway.
Ken, what are we talking about today?
You know, it's we've oftentimes talked about blue zones in the community because it's quite a hot topic. But the blue zones actually came out of a concept of trying to create longevity around the world. So they looked at these different communities, five communities around the world, where longevity was being displayed, and discovered that there were 9 fundamental principles that created longevity. And then they brought those into Iowa and are attempting in many of the communities across Iowa to implement these 9 principles to see if we can create longevity.
And as we say, this is the same principles that we could look at wherever you're at in the world. You could be in Paris, France. Oh, that sounds fun. Yeah. Or Moscow, it'd be cold. All right, how about Israel? It'd be warmer there at least. My wife's in Australia now.
But yeah, Australia.
Yeah. All right. Skip all this. We're all going to Australia right now.
Yeah, and wherever you are,
principles hold.
Same principle hold. They're fundamental to longevity.
Which are?
The principles themselves? Sure, let's talk about those things. One of the most fundamental ones is to move naturally.
Mm.
Another one is to have a right outlook in life, in particular, knowing your purpose. Another one is downshifting, knowing how to work less, take it easy, you know, taking vacations. A whole bunch of around food, eating till you're 80% full, getting more veggies, less meat, more and less processed food in your diet, drinking a glass of red wine a day. You can't save it up for the weekend. It has to be every day. Belonging, having a healthy social network, connecting, reconnecting with your religion or something with higher purpose, and prioritizing your family. Those were the 9 principles in the Blue Zones community for longevity.
Right. And then I added a couple more from my world where I start the exercise, meditation, diet, sleep. And then I talk about connection to self, connection to other, connection to family and community, connection to nature and the world outside yourself. So you can make a difference in this world. Knowing your purpose in life and really starting to live that purpose, that fundamental truth, as well as getting to really... who are you? So the vision is really about who you are. We're going to have a whole show on vision and goals. And therapeutic process, really engaging in the process of change, which sometimes means seeing a therapist. Sometimes it just means getting your butt in gear and getting yourself to move and having life work for you. But today's topic is...
Just taking a look now. So we've got longevity that we've talked about. But where's the happiness? Because long life does not necessarily equate to longevity. Now, if you don't live long, you might not be happy.
but you won't know it.
But if you live long, you're not necessarily going to be happy. You could be miserable as anything for most of your life. You could be in pain and still have a very long life. So today I think us turning our attention towards the happiness quotient. How do you thrive? The original guy that did the work on the Blue Zones project, Dan Buettner, who was working with National Geographic, you know, he came up with the Blue Zones concept. And after he was done in the late 2000 or 2010, something around that time, he said, what about these communities? Are they thriving? Is their life, are people happy? And that became an interesting question because, you know, longevity, in a sense, We've beat longevity. Now, nobody thinks they've lived long enough, but if you're a Cro-Magnon man, 18 years. That was the average life expectancy.
Or 100 years ago, it wasn't...
No, 100 years ago, 1900,
yeah,
in the United States, 48 years of
really?
Age. 48.
That's even less than I thought.
Ancient Egypt, 25 years.
Really? That's all it was?
That's all. 14th century Europe, Middle Ages in the Europe,
yeah,
30 years, average age. Now, we hear all of these stories about somebody, Methuselah, or somebody living to be, yeah, all these. Well, you've had a lot of time to be able to get a couple of long livers out of that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we don't get, we have gotten the lion's share of longevity. We don't feel it, but indeed,
We in the United States.
We in the United States, yeah, and around,
right,
the world.
Right.
If you take a look at the numbers around the world, people are living into their 80s quite comfortably right now.
But this actually brings up a really interesting point. My wife's actually in Australia right now, visiting her mom, M-U-M.
Mom.
Right. Who is quite ill. She's 93 and hasn't left in her house in years. And there really is that notion of quality of life, not just quantity of life.
Yeah. Are you happy?
Are you happy?
Yeah, right.
And in the States, we spend a huge, huge proportion of our medical budget on the last few months of life, which does not bring any more happiness.
40%. 40% is spent in the last 6 weeks of life.
40%.
Wow. It's in that neighborhood.
Wow. Thank you for the statistics, because I knew it was a lot.
No,
I didn't realize 40% on the last 6 months of life.
No, 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
I believe it's 6 weeks.
So it's not like you're having better quality of life. You're just
extended
hooked
death.
Up to extended death?
Extended death. What that, and there's been some really interesting work done up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
On good counseling with people at end of life. And they've reduced their medical bills in that in some of the communities there drastically by just giving good counseling for end of life. And they've actually shown that they've increased the quality of life at the end of life by this intervention. And it's not trying to get people to terminate early. It's allowing the natural processes to take place and giving the person options at end of life rather than looking at basically putting you on morphine drip and,
yeah,
seeing how to keep the pain down, and but basically being unconscious until the body suffers some catastrophic cessation of some sort,
right,
and out they go.
Yeah.
But you keep them, and the truth is that the amount of morphine that's going into the system usually starts to close down the system.
Yeah.
So this is a different way of looking at it and saying, listen, we could literally change the whole medical system in the United States, the cost of the medical system, by just good counseling for end of life.
And give better quality of care. I mean, I think what I deal with a lot from my end as a therapist is really getting that, letting go of the fears, the stigmas, the shame, the guilt, the doubt, the remorse, all that kind of stuff, and going back to, without fear, without that judgment, without that pain, what's the best for that person who is suffering at that point in their life? What will give them the best quality of life? And by giving them the best quality of life, it allows you who are still living to, let's say, take care of an elderly parent like my wife, who's taking care of her mother right now, who's not looking well to survive much longer, is that giving both of them quality of life. So it's not just my mother-in-law who could pass in peace, in real peace, and not being tortured on her way out, which is, mm-hmm, almost what happens, but also my wife can then have some peace and reconciliation around her and her mother's relationship and find some way that they could both grow so that my wife can grow so that she could then pass it on to the world around us.
Yeah. And because life is going to be longer. I mean, right now, there's the expected by 2050 that likely in the low 80s, right now it's 78 years of age. By 2002,
yeah,
I think it was around 78 years of age. By 2050, it's going to be 82 years of age. Average life expectancy. So the number of centenarians and people living even longer are going to increase. And a lot of the problems that we are encountering as a society, we never encountered before.
Yeah.
Because they didn't exist. Like things like, even like menopause. 100 years ago, people were dying on average by the time before hitting menopause, be it male menopause or female menopause. You know, they weren't living through a lot of the stuff that we now are living through, and we're being productive.
So where does happiness fit into longevity?
Well, why don't you say where we're at?
Oh, okay. We are at KRUU 101 FM on your dial in Fairfield, Iowa, solar-powered radio. Fairfield, Iowa, and this is Mental Health Matters.
And email us at mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com. We broadcast 6 Thursday, Tuesday nights. We broadcast Thursday afternoons and on the archive for everybody around the planet. But Rob, before you jump into that, I want to ask Rob a question. Rob, as a pastor, you're a pastor for a long time, 20-some years, right?
Right.
And I know a bunch of my friends who are pastors. This is one of the largest issues they deal with.
Death.
Is death.
Yes. And not then, happiness, but death.
Well, yes.
Right.
And then how do you deal with that, you know, in terms of talking about God and themselves and the point of connection? And it seems that those last 6 weeks of life where you're spending 40% of the medical budget is not about connecting with God. It couldn't be further from connection from God. I don't know, but tell me from your perspective as a former pastor for many, many years.
Well, in the church, you know, the last 6 weeks heavily depend upon your connection to God, and how, you know, how you view what's going to happen at death, and you know, where you're going to go. I remember this woman. Her husband died, and I was at the mortuary helping, and she brought in a red work shirt and jeans, and that's what she wanted her husband dressed for in the for the funeral. And she said, I want them so that when I see him in heaven, I'll recognize him, because those are the clothes that he always wore. You know, so there's a whole mentality and a whole spirituality around where you're going and how you're going to get there and stuff within the church. But the my work in the church was more in terms of preparing in advance people mm-hmm. for what death is going to entail. And by the way, there's a very big movement here in Fairfield of several groups that do offer that kind of experience in preparing for death and preparing for, you know, the afterlife or whatever way in which they believe.
And I think it really comes back to that notion that we're talking about today, and I don't know how happiness and death became our topics, but that notion of happiness itself for the living as well as for somebody passing,
right.
And again, in a way that actually really nourishes their body and their soul. And when we come back to the people that are living, and for us to live our lives healthy as we are today, where none of us are going to be passing anytime soon, we hope, that connection, that same sense of connection should be lived today.
Right. And you know, in the church, again, preparing, as you just said, preparing people around people who have died is as important as preparing people for that are going to die. Again, a member of, at a wake, the woman came up to a widow and said, you know, Sam is in a better place now. And she said, like hell, Sam's better place is sitting right here beside me. So obviously there was a lot of work to be done there in terms of dealing with those kinds of situations. But happiness.
But so much of, let's transition backward. One of the things about end of life and moving it back is that leading a happy life, well, at the end of life, there's not going to be quite the same turmoil at the end of life if you look back and you had a wonderful life that you lived fully all the way. But if you had a miserable life at the end, then that's not going to be putting you in a good predisposition to thinking about wonderful things maybe to come.
Well, I think that's why it's such an interesting discussion, because happiness really does come back to living your life in fulfillment. So when it comes time to pass, that there's not this need to hold on artificially. None of us want to go. None of us want to die, obviously. But we all want to live fully, completely. It's not the quantity. It's like our relationship with children. It's not so much always the quantity of time. It's so much more the quality, the depth of experience, and really living our lives fully, which really comes back to this notion of happiness.
Right. And when you look at the happiness quotient, about 50% of your happiness is a genetic predisposition. Mm-hmm. It's just in your genes. Mm-hmm. Happy families breed happy people. And it's not just the socialization. It seems to be something even deeper than that. About 10% of what's going on in happiness is life circumstances. Win the lottery, not win the lottery, got a good
win
job.
Win the lottery and lost all your money.
Yeah,
win the lottery but screwed it up. And
Yeah. And another 40% is how we think and act daily. So the truth is that about half of what's going on with happiness, we don't have any control of. That's just our genetics. And the other half of happiness, something that you have some rational control of, your life experiences.
But that's kind of like what I talk about with depression. Depression is really two qualities. It really is that biological perspective as well as circumstance. But the biology, at least in depression, is something you can affect through the big stuff that we're talking about, exercise, meditation, diet, and sleep, and some of these other qualities of connection. And by really developing that, you could really shift the neurochemistry and alter the whole sequence of the biological outcome. So it's not always medication, though sometimes medication's needed. It's really finding that perspective. And then for circumstances, it really comes back to engaging in that, what I call that therapeutic process. Sometimes that means a therapist. Sometimes it means really allowing yourself to go there. But again, happiness is that outcome of that.
Right. And the happiness seems to have some set point for an individual. Mm. Individuals have... there's a predisposition to come back to some level of happiness. They've shown, actually, that, again, lottery, win a lottery, for about, it depends on how much you win, obviously, but not that much. After about 3 to 6 months of having a lot of happiness, being happy, not happiness, but not the kind of fundamental baseline, but just this sense of buoyancy, et cetera, that we might call happiness. After 3 to 6 months, you still have a ton of money, but you're not any happier than you were before in terms of baseline happiness.
Well, that's also true. The opposite. People who come back as amputees, for instance, something terrible happens to them. You've heard the same study, right?
Yep.
They've lost everything in their body, and you would think the most terrible circumstances. And
the buoyancy comes back.
Absolutely. If you allow it to be there, you come back to that set point again.
Yeah.
Now, just like if you win $1 million, you know, yes, if you're in poverty, having some money, once you have some level of success, makes you a little bit more happier. But after that,
well, and again, can money buy happiness? That becomes a fundamental. And now, basically, it's good to have money, but there's a toxic quality of if you want money too much. Mm. So there's a real playoff. And what's been shown, now this is across the United States, that after about $75,000 a year, there's no increase in happiness with more money.
Mm-hmm.
Up to someplace, now in Fairfield, that's likely closer maybe to $45,000 a
year. Right, it's different around the world, obviously.
Because it depends on where
you
are.
But it's not money is the key. Obviously, a little bit, enough to survive, where you're not thinking about survival. But once you're past that point, you really start coming back to, just like the amputee, coming back to some bigger quality, like purpose in life. Once you have survival down, then we come back to what's really more important. Who are we and why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
And doing something about it. Getting in action about your purpose in life.
Yeah.
Not just sin with it.
So one of the things that with money and perceived status, you see, one of the things that if a person, as you were saying, in other cultures, they don't need quite as much, because if a person perceives that they have equal to or slightly more or better circumstance than the people around them, their happiness goes up quantumly.
Yes, yes.
It's just, and it's all a perceptual thing because it has nothing to do with the actual amount.
Yes.
They could be in very impoverished conditions, but if they have something that they feel they're at least in the average or slightly better, happiness goes pops right
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but that becomes lost in, is my reference point outside myself or am I finding fulfillment within me? By the way, you are listening to KRUU-FM, 100.1 FM, the best radio station from the center of the galaxy here in Fairfield, Iowa. And if please email us at mentalhealthmatters@krUUFM.com. This is Scott Terry, and you could also get a hold of me if you ever need me for anything. I run the Art and Counseling Center both here and throughout Chicagoland, and lots of other changes that we're trying to make here. So, Ken, and our special guest, Ken Daly, of course. Ken, so let's get back to this notion of just happiness. So what else can we do to actually increase our happiness, apart from some of this purpose in life and things?
Exactly. So one of them is to count your blessings. Just being aware of what you have.
You mean literally count them?
You literally count your blessings.
Got it.
Just figure them out. What are the things that you have that you're bringing to the table? Because so often we, again, perceive around us somebody having this, somebody having that, some externalizing.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you say, oh, I don't. But you don't go back to what you actually do have. So counting your blessings,
is that
being
like
aware.
People are sitting there saying, you know, health is the most important. And it's like you've lost your partner and you feel like killing yourself. Well, but you're healthy and you've got the possibility to create new relationships and to create new wealth and new possibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, like getting back to what's fundamental and that you could create it. And if you don't have your health, come back to what's fundamental about who you are to create quality of life now.
Mm-hmm.
Fully and completely up to your capacity. And we only have our capacity. If you're in a wheelchair, you're not going to do a marathon. But that doesn't mean you've got to sit and mope. It means you could get up and move being in a wheelchair. We all have limitations. Freedom within the boundaries, Maharishi said.
Yeah, a friend of mine a long time ago who was a paraplegic said, we're all able-bodied temporarily. And, you know, it's
that's
like,
great.
You know, we all have our limitations and we will encounter new limitations. Or we can count our blessings. We can keep moving forward. And the people, and you can move forward both ways. I mean, there are living a long life. Actually, people who live the longest in life actually are people that are slight worriers, actually.
Yeah.
they're a little bit concerned about their health most of the time. And the freewheelers that everything is fine and everything, they have a tendency not to watch their food. They don't watch quite as well, and they don't live as long. At the same time, happiness is really important because it's the quality of life. So it's this playoff.
So one is counting your blessings. Tell us a couple others.
Hear the music around you. Hear the music. You know, if you're out, so often we go for a walk or we don't go for a walk, but go for the walk. Go, and when you're out there, enjoy it. Just
really
soak
be with it.
Be with
every one of the senses. Notice, and I say to this when people are stressed, every one of your senses notice. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Notice what you're smelling. Notice what taste is in your mouth. Notice what you see, but really in detail, the corner of an edge. Really focus details. Touch something, but really touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly, hardly, really touch. What sounds can you fully embrace? You know?
Yeah. It's a connection of mind-body. It's a connection of mind-body.
Yeah,
body.
Back to the same thing we're talking about, exercise, right?
A few last program we had talked
yeah,
about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
It's, again, when you connect this mind-body or body-mind. I prefer the word body-mind because body is so much easier to connect with than mind. Mind is oftentimes more difficult, abstract qualities. The body, you know, if you want to feel happy, just sit up. Just straighten up your spine. You can't feel bad and be
everybody
straight.
Do that right now.
Yeah,
sit up. Everybody, sit up. Wherever you're at, sit up.
Just a slight inclination of the body upward like that. You change your mental attitude. Absolutely. You know, other things that you can do to increase happiness. You know, cuddle. Enjoy. Set your sexuality. Embrace that.
Don't be
literally.
Afraid.
Nurture your spirituality.
Stop making it mean something other than it is. Just connect.
Yep. Spirituality, whatever that is for you. Connecting with nature for some people, or it could be very abstract.
Like Rob was talking about with God. I mean, it's really about, again, it's just like exercise or diet. It has to be you. What works for your body? Mm-hmm. What works for you? Spirituality, stop with the concepts and the judgments and that God's going to punish you. Do what works for you. Connect to God or spirit or that energy or whatever you call that higher space mm-hmm. for you.
And you're saying move your body. You know, this is another major way to increase happiness. As soon as the body moves, it's very hard to be depressed and to be walking.
That's just interesting.
If you're out for a walk, it's very hard for you to be depressed, because if you allow yourself to be depressed and to let it pull you down, you'll stop.
So what I talked about was that 30 minutes of intensity in the exercise program, you're going to shift the brain chemistry. And then you do the other aspects, the connection to your body, really connect to your body, and get that you're the one choosing it. You're the one choosing to take purpose and control over your life.
Yep. Laugh big. Laugh big. Just absolutely enjoy your life. Because, again, there's a sense of inhibition that we might have. Just let it go. Laugh big, laugh loud, laugh long, laugh hard. That's another one that I think increases happiness.
I remember, who was that guy, Bernie Singer? You know, the way that he cured cancer was doing the laugh therapy.
Right.
I forgot his name.
Yeah. And there's the whole laugh yoga movement.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it gets a tad gimmicky at some point in time. But at the same time, laughing big is therapeutic. Do something nice for somebody.
Because again, if I could change somebody else's life, it'll change my life. And if I could change who I am, it'll affect others. It'll shine a light on somebody else. And by seeing them smile and grow and transform, it will make me grow. Mm. So we really have to think. I always talk about things thinking systemically. Always think systemically, everyone.
Yeah. I can remember when I was a very young man, was 22, 21. And went to a restaurant and somebody gave us, unbeknownst to us, this person that I was with, a free meal. We never found out who it was.
Wow.
Never, ever.
And you remember that all these years?
All these years later, because it was just such an act of complete anonymous giving that that has actually affected me and a lot of the things that I do from day to day. Because of that one small incident. It was a pay forward that has paid back actually for society big time, because I spend a lot of my life giving back.
And you can imagine that person who paid for it felt that in some way, shape, or form themselves.
At that moment. Yep.
Okay. Anything else you want to say to wrap up?
Yeah.
Just blelt out a couple more.
Good. Make more money than the people around you. Oh, God, I hate to say it, but I have to be objective. That's the truth. You know, feeling that
you're not getting lost in caring.
And that's kind of synonymous with that same idea. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Identify with your heritage.
Whatever that heritage is.
Yep. Looking back on yourself, happy memories, letting yourself ruminate sometimes on that. Be an optimist. Try new things. Tell someone... your story.
Explore. Really
just share.
Explore.
Just share. Share your experience of life. Marry happy. Absolutely. You know, if you can find a partner that gives you happiness.
A real partner.
Yep. Visualize happiness. Make time for yourself. Make time for the world.
Well, thank you, Ken. Another wonderful show with Ken. We'll be happy to have Ken back. Thank you, Rob. And this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. Have a great day, everyone. And do email us. Bye.